Welcome back to the Kelowna Real Estate Podcast, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Matt, what's going on today?
Another beautiful day in the Okanagan. Yeah. It is gorgeous out there, dude. Loving this. You know, it's still like minus 11.
Yeah, it's warm inside my house. So Bank of Canada announcement today.
Yeah.
This will obviously be airing a few days after this intro. Holding rates as expected.
Yeah, unfortunately as expected.
Yeah, we've been pushing that forecast out every couple months, but there is somebody I'm connected with on LinkedIn here. He's a data analysis. So he says, yes, this was expected. However, a 63% chance of a rate cut by June is expected. 48% chance that one cut will happen. 15% chance that two cuts will happen. If I was a betting man, I would say we won't see two cuts, but I do think we will definitely see our first cut by June.
So you don't think April 10th? There's another cut.
I don't know.
I hope so much that there is, but I think it's going to be June 5th.
Yeah.
We're going to see the cut.
So we'll update you guys. Obviously, everyone follows this and you guys will probably know the same time we do, but we'll try and get our intros pretty in sync with that.
No way, man. We're breaking news here, dude.
Yeah.
We got this. Yeah.
But with the cost of borrowing staying high, we are seeing projects being delayed in terms of construction.
Yeah.
Matt, you have a couple projects that you wanted to highlight.
Yeah. One Varsity, which we've talked about quite a bit on the show, has been delayed due to low pre-sales because of the interest rate, because of the short-term rentals, because of lowering prices. Just doesn't make sense to build these projects. Like, the developers put a lot of money in, a lot of time. And if you don't know for sure that you can sell them and make a profit at the end, how much of a risk are you willing to take on that? So we've seen One Varsity, the Stober Group had a development plan for the original Joe's site on Pandozi, which has been paused. There's a few other things going on that have been paused. So it's interesting, you know, like the projects being built today are going to affect the home prices years from now, right? So like we're almost setting ourselves up for a boom in a few years because of this low supply, high immigration, high growth in the Okanagan. So I think the long-term aspects of real estate prices are really good, but in the short term, waiting for those rates to drop.
Yeah, we're kind of fighting a battle on both fronts in terms of trying to put units on the market and trying to bring down inflation and make it affordable on the rate side.
Yeah.
They kind of counter each other. Yeah. Something that is going up in value incredibly fast, Bitcoin, which Matt and I know nothing about really, but it's pretty impressive that, so essentially in the States, they've kind of allowed for regulations to pass for ETFs and, you know, other type of funds that allow this investing to be done more accessibly. And a lot of larger companies are getting involved. So as soon as that happened, Bitcoin soared off to a record high of nearly 70,000 US Bitcoin, which equates to over $90,000 Canadian. And there is a halving that's supposed to happen, I think it's in April. So that's going to, again, kind of continue to decrease the supply, which is going to increase the price. So yeah, pretty interesting to see that happen.
That is interesting. What brought that on? Do you have any insight to why that's happening?
Yeah, it was like the ETF. So basically you can buy an exchange trade funds for Bitcoin, you know? So it's like a cheap mutual fund that you're allowed to invest in now, and you don't actually have to buy Bitcoin. You're buying in these funds that, you know, invest and manage in Bitcoin.
Damn. Yeah. Just makes it seem safer, right, for everyone, the average person to get in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I would ever use the safe word with that type of investing.
I want like just perception. I mean, perception, like it just seems like it would be a bit.
It proves the point that, like, I think one of the biggest battles cryptocurrency has seen is government intervention. I mean, much like housing, as soon as the government signs off on something that they agree with, a lot of people kind of back it and, you know, the cost goes up. So it's similar to housing projects. If the government signs off on some of these like CMHC type purpose-built rental incentive programs, that's where developers put their money. So if we could also see the government incentivizing developers on just these type of projects that are developing single family houses or condo units that are not just purpose-built rental, we would not just see the price, you know, stabilize there, but we'd see the confidence come back in the market. So
yeah,
the government plays a massive role in this stuff.
Yeah, no doubt.
Going to our guest today, Amanda Hamilton. She is an interior designer, author, serial entrepreneur, has a bunch of different companies where, you know, she basically project manages and renovates, and you can buy like cookie cutter type kits, or maybe that's the wrong word. And from an interior designer point of view, but you can buy like kits that she'll ship out to you that have the right color palette.
Yeah.
So somebody like me who's colorblind, it adds a lot of value to it.
Yeah, we go into a lot of depth on all these things, and it was a good episode. Yeah. This episode, like every episode going forward, is brought to you by the best brokerage in town, my brokerage, Century 21 Assurance Realty. It really is the best brokerage. And I don't know if everyone knows this, but at our brokerage, like, they will make you a profile video. I don't know if you've seen any of the ones going around, but there are some quality videos coming out of our office. They are like professionally made.
Yeah, I just saw Jackie Bradford's. Yeah. It was awesome. Watch it till the end. She's got a great sense of humor.
Very much business in the front, party in the back in that video. But like, I want to hire her as an agent. Like, that is a quality video. And just as an agent, having a video like that on the top of your Instagram pin or on your Facebook or in the bottom of an email or on your website, like, that's a huge difference maker in this day and age, right? Century 21 provides you with this video, walks you through how to do it, films it, edits it for you, and it's quality. You can't get that everywhere. So I believe in it. Check out my video as well, pinned right at the top of my Instagram page that I made there. But if you want to find out more about Century 21 Assurance Realty, reach out to Max or Dean. They'd love to talk to you about it. And also call one of our agents if you're planning on listing or buying a house.
Okay, welcome to the show, Amanda. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I love doing these types of things. I can already tell you guys are going to be so fun.
It's the name of the game for us.
How?
Yeah. I don't know. I got a gut feeling. I'm a woman, right? I have that like woman's intuition. So I have a feeling about it.
Yeah.
You can tell by looking at the art behind Taylor.
Yeah.
And I'm just a bobblehead. That's Taylor always wanted.
Yeah.
Check out my art.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's risque.
Those are two naked people.
I didn't even notice. Yeah.
But see, like, damn, I just arranged it so you can barely see it.
Yeah. Perfect. That's a nice trick there.
Yeah, we need to get this on YouTube now so people can actually see what we're talking about.
Then I should have cleaned up my desk a little bit, right?
Yeah. Busy entrepreneur, you know, like around. I think it goes with the territory.
Yes, yeah. Totally does.
Okay, well, we'd like to ask our guests to connect with our listener just by telling us about your kind of perfect Friday. Mm. What do you do to be productive and leading into the weekend?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm really big on routine. In the past, I used to be like far more loose with my schedule, like kind of a bit of a disaster. I was that person that was like late for everything, but I was finding it was bringing me a lot of stress. So as my businesses grew and demands on my time have increased, I've just like really leaned into discipline and routine and rituals. And they sort of allow me to perform at a really high level. I think, you know, physically, mentally, spiritually, all those things. So yeah. I kind of had a rule for this year, and I started late last year too. I've been working on like slowing down my mornings and making them more intentional to set myself up. So I start my day with something called 10-10-10. So 10 minutes of meditation, 10 minutes of journaling, 10 minutes of reading. Then I hit the gym for an hour. Then I take my doggo for a walk. And then I'm like, I got to get the protein in the morning. So I usually have like a protein shake or whatever. And then I rush into the studio. So evenings are kind of the same, but in the reverse. So it's like, I love cooking. So I'll make like a really beautiful homemade meal. I really loved Half-Baked Harvest. If anybody cooks from her, she's amazing. And this is like, I'm not getting paid for this. I'm just telling you, it's so good. And then again, walk the dog again, you know, this theory that like you eat and then you walk, it's supposed to help your digestion. And then the evenings chill, like I stretch, and then I usually unwind with like a book or a show. Sometimes I do Lego or a puzzle.
Oh, no, that's quality
There's
time.
Usually lots of candles. Yeah. I know it's like, it sounds so boring.
No, but it doesn't the thing at is, all. Is, like, that I sounds find, actually wicked. Yeah.
It's like during the week, it's like I need that routine. And then the weekend, I allow myself to be like way more loose. And so I'm really big on time blocking. Like everything goes into my calendar. And when people see my calendar, it scares the shit out of them. But honestly, it increases my chances of completing things. But I also think that part of that is like allowing some grace and flexibility, like within that framework. So like you have the time block, but you move things around. So what I'm saying is I have trained myself to be very disciplined, and it's allowed me to really reduce my stress. So those like rituals and habits and stuff have been like really beneficial for me as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Did you start your morning routine with The Miracle Morning? Did you read that book?
Yeah, it's really similar. Like every single book on habits, I've pretty much read it. Yeah. I actually spent a quarter a couple of years ago, like just digging into every habit book.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the thing is lots of us are readers, but we don't always execute these things. And so I started being like, no, we have to actually execute these things. So, you know, Miracle Morning, Robin Sharma has one. I think it's called the 5 a.m. Club. Like there's lots of books like that. What is it? Aubrey Marcus's Own the Day, Own Your Life or something like that. Like, you know, the H2O cocktail in the morning with the Himalayan salt and the lemon. So I think all of these things, everybody's different. Like you have to choose what your ritual is, but that's the ritual that works for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've kind of just had this epiphany lately too. You always know this, but like you read books, it's not about the amount of books. Like if you just took to heart one book, you're probably better off than just reading 100 books and not doing anything in them, right?
So, 100%. Yeah. 100%. And I'm a big reader, so like you got to have the highlighter and the notes in the back, because I think going back and referencing that stuff again, and actually even if you take one nugget from the book and execute it, to me the 8 to 12 hours or whatever it took to read it is totally worth it.
Right now I'm doing the double whammy where I read it and listen to the audiobook at the same time.
Okay, I think that that's brilliant. And if somebody, I feel like this should be a business thing or an app or whatever, but when I buy the book, I want the audiobook for free with it, because I agree sometimes you have to audiobook, sometimes you want to read it. I find fiction is easier on audiobook, business is tough on audiobook. You should just get both. And so sometimes I buy both, and that's just so ridiculous.
Okay. Can I hold you accountable then? You have a book. Like, we haven't touched on this yet. You've released one.
Yes, I do have a book.
Do you have an audio book on that as well? Can you do both?
I do have an audio book.
Do you?
Did you do the narration for that?
Oh yeah. I used to do musical theater voice. Man. I was so excited to do the audiobook. It's actually a really cool process.
Yeah.
And it's a memoir. So like, it is weird to me that somebody else would read my memoir, because what if they say it in a way and I'm like, well, that's not the tone of voice that I would have used, and that's not how I would have said it. So I actually loved it. It was so fun.
So do you sell yours as a package, a 2-for-1?
Yeah, good question.
No. Oh. No, because this is what I learned.
Not yet, from this day forward. Yeah, not yet.
This is new business idea. I'm an entrepreneur, shiny object, new concept. Yeah. But what I learned too is, for anybody who is looking to write a book, is the publishing industry, and they'll say this about themselves too, is very old school. It is like very behind. So I did a hybrid model. So it wasn't self-publishing and it wasn't traditional publishing. It was in the middle. But the way that it's set up on the platform, I don't even know if I could do that. Like, it's not even up to me. Like, my audiobook is basically like owned by like, well, it's not, oh, it's owned by me, but it's on the Audible platform, right? Yeah. So like, I don't know, unless I gave it away for $0, but hey, got to make that $3.33.
Would Audible even let you do that?
Probably, because they do have a free section. Like, if you get Audible Prime, there's actually a bunch of free books, but they tend to be more like classics and things like that.
Yeah, the old ones. Yeah.
Yeah, but now you're asking me to give up my $3.33, and I don't know if I want to do that.
No, I'm not asking you.
Nobody's making money writing books unless they're like a hugely popular author.
Yeah.
Which you're on your way to do.
Yeah. One day.
Yeah. What is your book about? Can you highlight that a little bit?
Yeah. It's called Not That Likeable and Other Stories I Told Myself. So it kind of gives it away a little bit, but it's my childhood all the way up to grade 12. And I was like pretty, can I swear on this podcast?
Yes.
I was pretty fucking weird. So like some of the stuff I brought on myself, but I was bullied quite a bit. And I think honestly, it's just because I was like going through life the way that I thought, like, this is my personality and these are the things that I loved. And I was super involved with extracurricular activities. I was a bit of like an A-type student.
Yeah.
And, you know, those things were not working to my advantage from a popularity scale. So it kind of goes through that story of finding myself through that. And also too, I mean, I've had to navigate that as an adult. You know, when you, as a kid, you grow up and you think like, no one likes me, right? This then becomes the story you tell yourself. And like, how do you work through this? And then recognize, you know, later on that like, that's just stuff that happens to you when you're a kid. I would never go back and change any of those experiences because they totally made me who I am today. And I grew up in a non-traditional home. My mom had me when she was 18. I grew up with my grandparents, my mom and her 3 younger siblings in a bungalow with 1 washroom.
Oh my God. Where did you grow up?
Edmonton, the city of champions.
You probably were growing up at the time of the City of the Champions.
I was. I mean, come on. It was Wayne Gretzky. I was born in 1982. Like, they renamed like Wayne Gretzky Drive, which was like near my house. So, you know, I always say is if everyone had a memoir, how much more empathy and compassion and grace we might have for people when we know their story.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's really easy for us to make a judgment on somebody, but like, if you read their memoir, you might be like, oh, that's why they're like that. That's why Taylor's like that. That's why Matt's like this. Like, the good, the bad, and ugly.
I got a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah. You guys got lots of explaining to do. You got a podcast. I'm sure you've told everybody everything already now.
Getting there. There's a few tidbits we'd left out, but.
Oh, I'm going to get them out of you on this one then.
Everyone's got to listen for us to tell everybody.
Exactly. We'll get you there.
So your book, you're also a serial entrepreneur. Like, what other businesses you got going on?
Yeah. So Amanda Hamilton Interior Design is my core business. We're celebrating 15 years since incorporation this year, 17 years since I started it off the side of my desk.
Wow.
And then I also started 3 Foot Nothing, which is a construction company. that was what my grandfather used to call me when I was little, 3 foot nothing.
Yeah.
I'm now like 4 foot or 5 foot nothing in a little bit, but small but mighty. Yeah. And so we just saw that there was a big gap in the market. I was tired, honestly, of dealing with like crappy contractors. And there's lots of really great ones, but there's also lots of not great ones. And also the construction industry is very traditional. So found the right person to run that business with me. And she manages the day-to-day. And I'm very high level on that. But it adds a ton of value to our interior design clients who have a combination of interior design and construction needs. Yeah. So now we can do that in-house. I also have an e-commerce business called Palette Archives. And so that ultimately services the clients who may not be in a position to hire an interior designer, or they're doing a smaller project. And so it's pre-curated interior designer palettes online where you get all the finishes and materials shipped to your door. And then I just incorporated a company last week. I can't quite say the name yet because I'm in the sort of final stage of determining what name we're going to go with, and also negotiating buying a domain from somebody. Yeah. So I'll keep it on the lowdown for now, but it is going to be e-commerce retail gifting. Gifting is like one of my love languages. I've been told I'm good at it. I want to curate these like beautiful gifts and retail products for people. And I'm definitely an early adopter. So I love discovering new products and then being able to like share those products with other people. So it's kind of a bit more of a passion project, but I'm excited because it's a new challenge. I haven't really done like the retail world, right? Like a lot of my business is very service based.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
The curating like home renovations, how did that come up and how do you do that?
So Palette Archives is like my baby. We're still kind of in startup phase with it. I was honestly on a beach in the US and this like idea came to me. I was reading this book and it kind of just like got me out of my own industry and thinking about how other industries have disrupted their own industries. And so what I found is I often get calls from people and they're like, this is always the sentence. I know what I like, but I don't know how to pull it all together. Right.
Yeah.
And so the problem is I would meet all of these really cool people, but then we wouldn't be able to take all the projects on, you know, like just sometimes the initial cost, the startup cost of just getting a project going, you know, just don't make sense when a client has a smaller budget. So we're actually first to market. And as I know it, we're the only one doing this concept, which is actually not working in our favor, right? When you're first to market, you have to teach everybody like what you're doing.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I wanted to democratize design and provide everyone with access to good design. So these palettes, you know, if somebody's flipping a house or doing a small reno where they're going to do it on their own, they're now able to protect their investment by being like, an interior designer who has 20 plus years of experience picked out these finishes and materials. I can use them. I can match them through another supplier who's even like, you know, more cost effective.
Yeah.
And then do this renovation on their own with their contractor or, you know, family or whatever. And then obviously, as you guys know, having a house that an interior designer has been involved in, they generally sell for more. Everything just feels more pulled together. So ultimately, I just wanted everybody to have access to good design.
Cool. So do people give you like square footage measurements, like send you a bunch of photos, or how does that?
So it's interesting because there's lots of companies that do that. I wanted this to be pretty hands off, right? Because the notion is as soon as I get involved, that becomes a very expensive process for the client and also very expensive on our end in terms of, you know, profitability.
Yep.
So there's like 35 palettes. You can go on and you can pick your palette based on sort of the inspiration images and things like that. And so ultimately they do it on their own. They get the boxes, they get the specifications, and they can go right to the supplier and purchase those goods. Or they could, as an example, take the blonde hardwood we've recommended and go to Home Depot and go, okay, this is close as possible. And here's the tile. And that's as close as possible.
Right.
Right. So really empowering them to protect sort of the money that they're investing in their house. And as you guys know, for most people, that's one of the like largest investments they make in their entire life.
Yeah. Well, I love that idea.
Yeah.
And speaking about large investments, then I'm going to put you on the spot. Like,
okay,
what is the best investment you can make as like DIY, home renovation, anything? Like, what do you kind of see as the trend right now that people are doing? What do you see the fails that are happening?
You know, this is such a great question. And it's one that I get asked quite a bit. But when people are renovating, I know it sounds so simple, but man, does paint go a long way. people will be like, oh, my house doesn't feel fresh. It feels dark or whatever. And I mean, designers love white paint. And I know sometimes we get a bad rap for it, but it is amazing what that does to a space. So, you know, painting the walls, or as an example, if a kitchen is laid out beautifully and you're okay with it and the cabinets are still really good quality and still in good condition, you can spray them out, I don't know, forest green or pink or cream or whatever you want.
Yeah.
And you're looking at maybe spraying out a kitchen might be, you know, $7,500 to $15,000, depending on the size of your kitchen. Or you could get a new kitchen, which could run you $30,000 to $50,000 plus, right? So plus it's incredibly disruptive to your house in terms of having to replace all your cabinets. So I think paint goes a long way. And then I think things like small upgrades, like cabinet hardware, lighting, right? That type of stuff starts to date, especially because, you know, our provinces are not that old. That means we have a lot of like 1980s vibes with that golden oak. So those houses are still beautiful, but they're just dated, right? So spraying things with paint and like updating the brass hardware and the lights and stuff goes a long way.
What about, what designs are we doing today that we're going to look back in 20 or 30 years and think, what were they thinking? I always think about this when I walk through houses. Like when you go through McKinley Beach, right? You see all these beautiful houses and I always think, how are these going to age? You know, like they look beautiful right now, but I don't know.
So I think probably the biggest mistake that either clients or let's say some designers make is that we capture onto these trends and we go hard on them. Yeah. So I'm not like that in fashion either. Like I buy cool pieces with the intent that I can mix and match with a few other things and have them for years to come. So obviously we were kind of in this like espresso era, and then it was gray on drab on, oh my God, I don't want to ever see gray again. Right. So now we're in that era where nobody wants to see gray and white anymore. And we've moved into this like warm era where we're talking about caramels and cognacs and things like that. So I always think the best thing to do is like take touches of that. Like if brass is still popular right now, but don't do brass door hardware, brass cabinets, brass plumbing, brass lighting, because then when brass isn't cool anymore or you get tired of it, it's freaking everywhere in your house. Like I love mixing metals. This idea that you can't mix metals is BS. You could totally mix metals. I also think like you shouldn't just have one millwork color in your entire house. There should be maybe like three different millwork colors. There can be different colors of paint. And I think that will make houses age better than when you go into these brand new houses and it's the same countertop throughout the house, same cupboards, same paint, and there's like what, five finishes in the entire house. It's just boring. Right.
Yeah.
So I do think adding some of this character in and layering these things will make houses have more longevity, and we won't look back being like, oh my gosh, why did we do this? It's only ever as good as though, like, you know, the client drives it often. I mean, we joke time. It's like, if we see one more white kitchen, but I'm also not going to like poo poo on a client that likes a white kitchen. If you love a white kitchen, it's your house.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I was going to ask actually, if somebody like, proposes their idea and it's terrible, are you like, hey, maybe you shouldn't do that? I'm asking for myself because like, I know my design's not great.
No.
Emily's got you on a good leash, dude.
Yeah.
It's a really good question. I'll tell you what, my perspective of this might vary. I think there's a lot of designers that have a specific aesthetic and their clients go to them for a specific aesthetic. That is not what we are about. The only thing that I say is that we don't do bad design, but I'm willing to do, you know, design that maybe it wouldn't be my first choice or it wouldn't be something I want to live in, but it's your house. So it's our job to sort of move you in the direction without trying to like put our own spin on it, to move you in a direction where we're like, this is still going to make you happy, but we can also confidently say that when this is done, we know that this is going to look really great. So for the most part, our clients will come to us with varying degrees of taste. And we have to decide which hills we're going to die on and which ones we're not, right? So
let the realtor deal with it in 10 years.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And you know, sometimes clients go like AWOL, as you know, and they just do their own thing. At that point, you just release control and you're like, I'm not going to photograph this and put this on my website, right? Like, but at the end of the day, I'm happy that you're happy with your house, even if I think maybe that's ugly or a bad decision. It's not my house, right? You have to be comfortable in it.
That's funny.
Do you find there's value in home renovations right now, like from a investment point of view, is there a monetary gain? Because I mean, you know, since you have a construction company as well, mm-hmm. like trades are so expensive, materials are so expensive. I mean, we've gone through this massive boom of renovations in, well, at least in the Okanagan, I'm assuming most of Canada, because mm-hmm. people had so much equity in their house.
Yeah.
But do you find now, like most of your clients are, I know it's going to cost me a fortune. I know I'm not going to maybe make money on this, but I'm going to get a house that I want because I don't want to move. Like what's kind of driving your clientele?
Yeah. Yeah, you bring up a good point. So during the pandemic, renovations were huge. Like we started the construction company at the right time because we started in 2018 and then we kind of went in, we got everything set up. And so it worked out really well during that time. My experience in running my business for so long is that renovations always go up when we're in a recession or the economy is struggling a bit, right? Because like you said, people are in a house that they love, there's equity in their house, but then they go, okay, but the market's a bit weird. Do I want to move, et cetera? I do think it's a good investment. I always think two things. If you're going to build a custom house from scratch and you land at a really great piece of property and you know you're going to hold on to that piece for a long time, great. But otherwise, if you can find a dog of a house that has really good bones and you get a good price for it, generally, and especially if you're like particular about what you want, I generally find that when you turn around and you sell those houses, you make more money off of them. You have more equity in them, right? But that's also challenging because it means those people have to have access to that cash. So let's say you're buying, I don't know, a $600,000 bungalow, but you know a renovated bungalow is, you know, selling for like 1.5 or something. Yeah, we can go and put 500K into that and you still have the delta of another 500K to make the money. But you do have to be really smart about where you're spending the money because we have done renovations where we just say to the client, we're like, why didn't you just tear this house down? Because now at this point, you're right. And you're right. We do get the odd client who doesn't care, who's like, I'm not really concerned about making my money back. I don't want to be crazy, but I love this house. I love this property. And I like want to stay here and enjoy it. But most of our clients want to know that at least at a bare minimum, they're going to be breaking even and that they're not like pricing themselves out of the market. But I always think renovations are great, but they're also the most stressful for clients. That's a lot to think about for clients.
Especially if you have to live in it, which I've done a few times.
We don't let clients do that. They're not allowed to live in the house during renovation. Yeah.
This is a great point. So, okay. So there's a anti-flipping tax. It's already been established, but now they're lengthening it to 2 years.
Yeah.
So that's going to kind of limit a lot of like flippers, I'm assuming some mm-hmm. of your clientele. But as a primary residence, it's great to add value. There is a capital gains yes. exemption. So tax-wise, like it makes way more sense. But then where do people go? Because on top of all that, Airbnb just got decimated in BC. I know you guys aren't struggling yet in Alberta. So where do people move for say 3 months when you're doing a massive renovation? Mm. Or less than 90 days, I should say.
Yeah, you know, and again, you bring up a really good point too, because, you know, when we're talking about, you know, investing in property in the Okanagan, that changes people's perspectives now, right? Because it was always like, okay, short-term rentals, right? So, I mean, obviously in Alberta, that's still a thing that you can do. We often do find some of our clients who are building secondary homes in, you know, Lake Country, have another home that they can go to, or they travel quite a bit where they're like, hey, we're going to Europe for the summer. We're going camping in our trailer, or we have a trailer, or we're going to stay with family. So I think that's the other reason why it's tough for people to like wrap their heads around renovating is because it can be very disruptive, right? And we often find by the time we get in people's houses at that point, they're like, we're so desperate to get this done. Can you start tomorrow? Right? Like, 'cause it's now been like 10 years that they wanted to renovate. But you're right. That is tough. And I think Kelowna in particular is in a tough position because you guys also don't have a lot of hotels. You know, and the hotels that you do have, it's really expensive to stay at them. So it's not like somebody can just move themselves and their family into a hotel for like 4 weeks and just be like, ah, whatever, no big deal. So that does make things tougher in that industry for sure. But generally what we find is, yeah, people have access to friends that might be out of town or somewhere to stay, or they're like, hey, I'm just going to get out of Dodge for a while. Then all this happens.
Yeah.
We do need to up our hotel game in Kelowna. Honestly, I've been saying this for a long time, but we do.
I'm putting this out there. It's my dream to do a boutique hotel. And when you put things out into the universe, it comes to you. So anyone who's listening, let's do a boutique hotel in Kelowna. Let's do something very badass.
I honestly love that idea. We've had a few people mention that on the show and also in my
Speakeasy,
business.
Speakeasy. But... like I spend a lot of time traveling and a lot of time in hotels. So honestly, I just feel like it's got to happen. Let's do it.
With the short-term rentals, there is an opportunity here. I've been beating 100%. This drum like crazy. There is an opportunity here. So if I figure it out.
Like it could have like a cool like ACE vibe too, right? Like we can have a couple. You know, let's do a few. Let's do a luxury one. Let's do more something cool.
When you can build two at twice the price.
Yeah, exactly. So anyone who's listening, you just hit us all up. We'll help you out with all the things. You guys can help them out. We're going to do it. I've decided.
There was a show. There was a couple girls out in Ontario that did a boutique hotel. Do you know which one I'm talking about? I think it's on Netflix.
No.
Oh, man. It was actually a pretty good show. And they did it during COVID. They're like, I think maybe it had 16 rooms. Like it was a motel.
Yeah.
And they're like, cool, we're going to flip it. We're going to turn it into Airbnb kind of thing. And then COVID hit and their contractors didn't show up. Anyways, it was pretty fun to watch.
Ugh. What is that show? I'll watch that tonight.
Well, we all need to watch it because we need to do the research since we're going to be doing this. We just need to come up with like a couple million dollars, you know, just a cool, I don't know, 20, 30 million bucks.
One thing about Kelowna is there's a lot of money in the city.
Yeah.
You just have to look for it. So
you call us, you give us your money and we'll make things happen.
Yeah.
And then you'll at the end, you'll be like, you're welcome.
It's the June Motel, the June Motel makeover.
The June Motel.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Honestly, it's worth a watch. Yeah, it was pretty good. But I think there is opportunity. Kelowna's kind of a tough one because there's not a lot of motels, but like Penticton is littered with these old motels close to the lake. Like that is an opportunity. I've been thinking about
Taylor, you're getting me fired up, man.
Peachland. I have a soft spot for Peachland.
Me too.
Like you can literally get like commercial property where you're just like staring out at the beach and it's like not even that much money. You're just like, what? Like it's so cute and quaint. Like I think the Okanagan is going to just blow up, especially after, you know, COVID and everybody just being like, you know what? Quality of life. I can work remotely. Yeah. I'm just going to go and stare out at the ocean while I do my work. Yeah. Not the ocean, the lake. Yeah.
My wife calls it the ocean all the time still, but she's from the island. So are you from Edmonton? I'm not seeing how that works.
Hey, whoa. I have a reason for this. I grew up sailing on the West Coast.
Okay.
So I grew up sailing the San Juan and Gulf Islands. And so I feel very like connected to water. So yeah.
You've had hardly any experiences, eh? Like, geez.
Yeah. I don't know if experiences really counts when you're traveling with like six people on a 30-foot monohull boat with one bathroom, which probably wasn't working half of the time.
That's what I call a character building
trip. Spaghetti every single night. So, I mean, it wasn't glamorous. This wasn't a yacht, okay?
Like, what about that sucks?
Yeah, I literally would eat spaghetti at like two meals a day. And then I met my wife and she stopped that, so. Well, like on the kind of property location, I'm going to kind of dive into some of our ending questions because it's just very relevant.
Yeah.
If you could buy a property in the Okanagan in the next 12 months, where would it be? What would it be?
Oh, I didn't know you were going to ask me where.
Well, how about ask it this way? Would you focus on the location or would you focus on the view?
Oh, the view's big. The view's big for me. So, I mean, I live in a city, right? Yeah. So I have that and I travel to cities. So when I'm in like, you know, R&R mode, I actually like kind of like cute, quaint, small, walkable.
Yeah.
So I think with that in mind, like I kind of have a little bit of a soft spot for Peachland. I've only been a few times, but it like immediately felt like really good.
That has a wonderful street.
Yeah. Like you're still relatively close to everything. And yeah, it would be tough because it's like, yeah, do you invest? Do you buy there? But I think, you know, given what you guys have going on right now with like the short-term rentals and kind of how that's been hijacked a bit, I'd be like, well, then I'm just going to buy something and I'm going to go out there. And then this is what I think everybody should do.
Lay it on us.
Thursday, you leave after work and you go to your remote location, wherever it is. You still work on Friday, but like no internet, no Wi-Fi, no social, no text. You just like do deep work. Then you have Saturday, Sunday, relaxing, do your thing. And then you lie back or whatever Monday morning and you get back to the office. Like I think having that like 3-day break from office life is so good for you and so renewing. And so again, my only request in addition to the hotel is like if somebody has a free seat on a private jet and wants to fly me out Thursday to Monday, I am down.
That's awesome. If I get that free seat.
Yeah, we'll speak to Air Canada for you, see if we can get some vouchers.
I have a neighbor that's a pilot. I can ask him.
Yeah, free interior design advice in exchange. I mean, you can't go wrong here, right?
Yeah.
It's like it's almost free. No, it's funny. I do actually have a few clients that do jet sharing, and I'm always like, one of these days, I got to jump on one of those jets just for fun.
Honestly, yeah.
Bit too long for a drive from Calgary.
Other than a private jet, what's the best thing you've ever spent money on?
Well, you guys will like this answer. I do have this Tom Ford runway jacket, men's bomber, that I have to mention because I got it at a consignment store. So that's really cool. Damn. That's going to stay in my closet forever. But no, more seriously, I think my house and my art. So I wasn't even in the market to buy a house when I bought this last house. I just happened to be on MLS or whatever it's called now. Yeah. I'm going to call it MLS forever.
Yeah.
This house had been on the market for an hour and I fell in love with it. I just had like weird feelings for it. And I was like, I need this house. And they were closing on it on Wednesday and it was mine Wednesday night. So I think that like when you find a house like that, like I said, that has like really good bones, like this is a 1918 house with a 1990s addition on it. It's got like really interesting character. You know, if you buy a house and you know, and again, we have a bit of an advantage, you know that there's going to be equity in it. Like I could turn around and sell my house and make money right now on it. I've only had it for about a year and a half. I think that's the thing. But the reason why is because I think life is crazy as an entrepreneur. And actually, life is crazy for everyone. Yeah, I think we live in a wild world right now. And my home has like really become, I don't know, my refuge and like my place for like relaxing and my rituals and my habits. And so I don't know that I ever want to sell it. That's how much I love it. Like this is the first place I've ever felt like it was like home that I really look forward to coming home to. Like I'm obsessed with my house.
Do you feel like somewhat anxious if people come over to your house because you feel like you're displaying your portfolio? Like, oh my God, like you picked the wrong color or this granite is so last year. Like,
oh my God, Taylor's laying it all out.
Taylor, this is great. I love it. Okay. So yes. And I think most interior designers feel this way. But I actually like when a new person comes to my house, I just tell them, I'm like, if you think you're coming here and you're walking into a show home, you are going to be sadly mistaken. Because our method at our studio is also like, we don't buy things for the sake of buying things. We want these things to be really reflective of our clients. And so I have art that I have that I love. I have pieces that I've picked up from all over the world. You know what? They don't all fucking go together. And I don't care at all. You know, and I also think the other thing is it's like people will be like, well, what's your style? I'm like, I don't know, like desert boho chic meets Italian 1970s vibe. Like there's so many different genres. I've got mid-century modern stuff. I have contemporary stuff. I have like weird stuff that I probably shouldn't even be in my home because it's just people are like, what is that? Why is that there? And I'm like, whatever, I like
it. We're so similar in that regard. And people always criticize me, you know, like my style is all over the place. It's okay, guys.
Well, everybody's like, no, your house is so cool. So this is the flip side. Everyone else thinks that they're like, no, you come in here and this place is so cool. And I'm like, this place is a hole. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? But it's my hole and I love it. It needs some pretty massive renovations because it really hadn't been touched since like the 90s. But no, I mean, my friends and people come over are like, this is a really cool place. And my friends' kids are always like taking snaps and TikTok videos. And so I think that it's a cool place, but it's not a show home. You know?
Yeah. It's Amanda Hamilton home.
It's all sorts of weird styles. And like, yeah, there might be some like underwear hanging about. There's probably a dog bone wherever you want to sit. There's a dog bone wedged in there somewhere. Yeah. You might find some of my contacts on my nightstand. Like, perfect. It's true.
All right, Amanda. Do you give back to any charities or do anything like that?
Yeah, I think professionally and personally, there's definitely a few charities I give to. Generally, like we give to quite a few, but anything that supports young adults with like career development and finding their passion. Also really passionate about financial and investment knowledge for women. I think that's a big piece for me too. And supporting young entrepreneurs. Those are kind of the main ones. And then of course, anything to do with animals.
Yeah.
I love animals. Like if I retire at like 95, like if I retire, I want to have like a no-kill animal shelter for like just all of the cuties and furry creatures. So yeah, there's a number of them, but it's generally around kids and women and entrepreneurs are the ones that I'm most passionate about. And we actually also have a scholarship with the university that I got my interior design degree with too. Oh, so cool. That's another way that we try to give back. And it's to encourage designers to travel and get experience abroad and kind of learn about other cultures and how design is explored elsewhere.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How can our listeners help you or connect with you? How can people reach out?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Amanda M. Hamilton. That's my personal account. So there's probably a lot of photos of my dog on there.
I was going through it this morning and there is.
Yeah, lots of photos of the dog. Or if you're like, you know, you actually care about interior design, then you can check out AHID Studio. So that's AHID Studio. Or you can email us at hello@AmandaHamiltonDesign.com.
Awesome. So anything else you want to touch on before we hit the road here?
Yeah, again, just my ask. The three of us are doing a hotel.
Yeah.
We're putting that out there.
Yeah.
And we want seats on a jet. Yeah. I mean, as much as I'm joking, I've never been very good at asking for help.
Yeah.
Kind of that personality type that's like, I can do everything on my own. So I'm just now in this like world of being like, I'm just going to ask for things that I want. I mean, I don't like actually need a seat on a jet, but I really do want to do a boutique hotel. I think that'd be such a cool project.
That would be awesome. Well, in life, you don't get what you don't ask for.
Yeah, exactly. I'm asking for it right now. Yeah. I have a really great quote.
Yeah.
It's by Brianna Wiest. And hopefully I'm saying her last name properly, but she has really amazing books if you haven't read them. It's, when you ask for a big life, you cannot keep fighting for a smaller one to stay. Bam.
Yeah, that is a mic drop.
We'll sign off on that note then.
All right, Amanda. Well, thank you so much for spending your morning with us, and get after it.
Thank you. This was fun. Can we do this again?
Yeah.
Once we have the hotel, we'll talk about like the challenges and how like Netflix featured it and like what that was like filming it behind the scenes and how we got financing for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds great.
This one will be the August Hotel.
Love it. It's actually great. It's a good name.
Yeah. I think so.
Well done.
Yeah. We'll connect with you later on. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Amanda.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.